Welcome to Juno Afternoon as we head into the 4th of July weekend. I'm Rhonda McBride. Coming up, homegrown patriotic music that strikes a chord in Juno, an update on Taku River conditions, and where you'll find Christine Lewis this holiday weekend, likely outdoors, where she says she does her best oil paintings. Also, getting to know spotted sandpipers, sharp-skinned hawks, and golden-crowned kinglets, this week's Juno Audubon Society's Birds to Watch. For our 4th of July forecast, not too bad. Cloudy tonight, lows in the upper 40s. Tomorrow, clouds decreasing, highs in the lower 60s. And for Sunday, happy birthday, America. Mostly clear skies, highs inching up into the mid-60s. Not seeing any precipitation in the forecast until possibly Tuesday night. Juno Afternoon, we'll be right back.
Hansen Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha anikach gunish cheese.
And you are listening to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us today. I'm Rhonda McBride. Well, across the nation, patriotic music will be the soundtrack for the July 4th weekend. And the Juno Community Band is going to bring it home to us at a concert downtown tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. And today, we get a preview of that. And joining us from the Juno Community Bands, we have Sarah McNair Grove. She's the president. T.J. Hovest, who will conduct tomorrow's concert, and Reese Bleakley, who is here in our studios with her piccolo in hand. And I look forward to hearing that in our program. So I got to ask you, and we'll start with you, Sarah. We look at patriotic songs to kind of lift our spirits. And boy, going through this time of COVID, it seems like we really need this patriotic music.
I think so, too, and that's why we're so excited that we were able to actually have a concert here just before the 4th. And, a lot of the music we're playing isn't really directly patriotic. I think it's going to do exactly what you said. It's going to lift our spirits and make us happy, and we are going to end with the Stars and Stripes, which is everybody's favorite.
So, TJ, you are a special guest here. You are conducting for the first time, and I understand that you went to high school here, but are now teaching in Fairbanks. What's it like to kind of pick up the baton for this concert?
Oh, it's been a really fun adventure for me coming home and getting to work as my professional career with my old colleagues and friends and mentors, and even my high school band director has also been in the group. So it's been quite a trip and just a lot of fun, and I'm super happy and grateful to be here.
Wow, that's such a chain there, to be reconnected full circle with your high school band director. Do you have good memories from being in high school band?
I do, actually. I pretty much lived in the band room when I was in high school. I played in all of the different groups we had, and as well I did the choir. But we did musicals and played in pit orchestras, and we played in pep band, and we went all over Southeast Alaska for festivals and competitions, and we went to New York City my senior year, which was very memorable and changed my life, and then I've done that since with my current students, and it's very neat how everything works out.
Well, Reese, you are not that far out from being in high school. Do you think that part of what makes being a part of these community bands is so much fun is that people get to kind of recapture some of that fun they had in high school?
Oh, I think for sure. I know that a lot of kids that are in it now will probably be coming back from college and whatnot and reconnecting with, you know, other students that they were in high school with or they were in band with. And so I already, a couple of the other performers are, I was played in band with. And so reconnecting with them and seeing how they're doing this summer and stuff, even if we just graduated, is, you know, it's a great experience.
You know, it sure is to see live music anymore. I think this is what's going to be really exciting. So, Sarah, tell us a little bit about what you're doing throughout the whole weekend, because this concert at Marine Park tomorrow is not the only thing.
No, we have several ensembles in the Juno Community Bands, and the one that we're talking about right now is the Juno Volunteer Marching Band, which gets together really just once a year. Its primary purpose is to be in the Douglas and Juno parades and provide some march music. And then to give the musicians who play in the parades a little bit more variety, we also have this one sit-down concert sometime during the week before the 4th. And this year, the dates just fell so wonderfully so that it could be Saturday afternoon on the 3rd, right before the 4th, and hope a lot of people will come out and listen to us.
Oh, well, I have a little taste of a previous concert from 2017, and this song is called Cheerio. not as in Cheerios that you eat, but because I think it's like a cheerful song,
right? It's a happy song, and that was so much fun because we actually did a little singing and whistling along with playing.
Well, I've got a little of it here to play.
So, oh, lovely.
So let's hear it.
So that was fun.
You know, it sounds like when you listen to these recordings that there's audience participation.
In that one, there really was. Actually, in that recording, you could hear the audience kind of whistling and singing along and laughing with us. It was great.
Do you encourage them to clap?
Yes, it's nice to know that they're appreciating it. It makes us feel good. It boosts our ego just a little bit when people clap for us. Don't you all agree?
I do.
So what's on the program for tomorrow?
So we have a mixture of, we have a couple marches, we have popular music from, you know, the last couple decades or from movies, and we also have some really traditional great band literature. So we have just quite a variety pack of great music that I think is going to be uplifting and beautiful. And some is just plain fun. We are playing Africa by Toto, which is silly, but it, you know, people will have a good time, I think.
Well, I think that you got to have a mix to keep people happy, and they appreciate that. I have to just bring up Stars and Stripes Forever, because that's kind of iconic. Are we going to have that?
We are. Actually, it will finish our program for us, close the program out.
And, of course, you know, the part that I always look forward to hearing is the upper register piccolo, because to me it's always been amazing that you can hear the piccolo over a loud band. And Reese brought her piccolo for us.
I did indeed,
so
yes.
tell us about what it's like to play that. Is that a difficult piece to play, the little piccolo solo?
For me, yes. Probably not for a lot of other piccolo players, but, you know, it's so iconic that you play it so often. It's like every year, you know, you need a piccolo player for the piccolo solo at the end. And so, yeah, I mean, you get used to it after a while, but having to get back into the swing of things with piccolo is hard. It's hard to do sometimes.
Well, it's kind of a busy little back riff to the march.
Yeah. It's kind of all over the place a little bit. A lot of up and downs and stuff. Very, very iconic. You know, you hear it and you're like, ah, yes, Stars and Stripes Forever.
So before you play it for us, give us a little taste of it. What are you doing now with your music background?
So I'm going to San Jose State University, and I'm a music performance major and linguistics double major. So just been going to school, you know, theory classes, ensemble classes, just trying to get back into the swing of things. Hopefully this next year will be a lot more normal. We were playing outside this past semester, because, you know, California is pretty nice, able to do it, but it was a lot different than what we're used to. So I'm hoping this next year will be a lot better.
Well, can you explain some of the things that you had to go through in school to be able to just play because of the danger of air being expelled. And I would imagine flute, and especially piccolo, pushes a lot of air.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so everyone had to still wear masks, even though we were socially distanced and outside. So flutes got a very special mask because of how our instruments are made and how we have to play them. And so ours was basically like a little bag that went over our face, and you just, there's a little hole that you stuck the head joint into, and your whole bottom part of your face was covered. It looked like a cuttlefish or something, you know, with the tentacles at the end. Yeah, it was interesting, but you got used to it. I hated wearing it, though.
Well, if you notice, some of our microphones have plastic bags over them. I'll be glad when we take those away. but anyway, so can we hear a little sample of your piccolo playing?
Yeah.
How much should I play? Just like the whole thing?
Just play and chill.
Just give us a little taste. Just,
okay.
To think that it plays over the whole band. So let's hear a little bit of it. This is from the 2017 concert. But, you know, I was listening to it and just really impressed with the musicianship. I mean, you must really feel wonderful that you can attract so many, not to have just one band, but several.
We are so delighted that there are so many adult players in this community that want to play with us and that are good players, that we can have this quality. So yes, it's a delight.
So here's what you can look forward to, the grand finale. I'll just play a little bit of this so I won't spoil it for you. It's got to be one of my favorite tunes. What do you think makes a song patriotic?
Well, I think it's something that makes you feel good about yourself and your country and makes you happy to be an American or, yeah.
Well, TJ, do you think that this 4th of July has special meaning to you given what we've been through with COVID? Do you feel sort of special affinity this year for the music?
I would say I always feel special affinity for all of the programs that I do, and I think that's such an important element of what we do in music is that it should speak to people in a certain way. So programming is pretty important to me, and this concert was very fun to put together. When I didn't know even like who all was going to be playing or what the group would be like, and I think it's going to be quite special.
How about you, Reese?
I think that I agree with both of them in that, you know, patriotic music is supposed to make you feel something for your country. But also, you know, playing any sort of music is supposed to make you feel something, regardless of if it's patriotic or, you know, sad or happy. And our goal as musicians is to help the audience feel that at the same time. So I hope that this concert, we're able to portray that for the audience, both a patriotic and a happy to be together again feeling.
So before we go here, are there some things you want to remind us about to take in tomorrow's concert or to see you at other events?
Okay, with the concert tomorrow, Saturday, July 3rd at 3 p.m. at Marine Park. And you might want to bring a chair to sit and listen. The concert will be about an hour. And then after the concert, we hope you all will come to the parade and see us in the parade.
Okay. But you're not doing just one parade.
We are doing two parades. We're going to be both in Juneau and Douglas, so you can come and see us in both or either one.
So can you? Are they staggered at different times, or are they at
yes,
the same?
Yes, the Juneau parade starts at noon, and the Douglas parade will start at 3 o'clock. So you can get both of them.
Sounds wonderful. Well, I want to thank both of you, or all three of you, for joining us today. This has been great fun.
Well, it's been fun for us. Thank you for having us.
All right. Thank you. Next, we'll have an update on the record high water that we've seen on the Taku River. We'll find out if the threat of flooding has subsided. But in the meantime, this is Barnum Bailey, and it was played in 2017 by one of the Juneau community bands. Enjoy.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Thank you for being here with us today on Juneau Afternoon. Floodwaters along the Taku River have begun to subside, but on Wednesday they reached a record high of 45.5 feet. And joining us to talk about that, Aaron Jacobs with the National Weather Service. So starting off, Aaron, for those of us who don't know where the Taku is, can you give us a sort of a situational guide here?
Sure, I can do that. So the Taku River is located east-southeast of Juneau. You go down Gatineau Channel, and then you go ahead and take a left-hand turn, and then there's a Taku Inlet and the beginning of Taku River, and it goes into Canada. So the headwaters of the Taku River starts in Canada and flows into Alaska.
So what is the hydrology of this river that perhaps makes it prone to flooding?
Well, what makes this river very interesting is that one of the tributaries, the Tulsipaw River, which is just on the other side of the Canadian border, has a glacier associated with the Tulsipaw Glacier. And on the Tulsipaw Glacier, there is a side basin that gets dammed up by the glacier, and it holds water. And that area, that side basin, is named Lake Snow Lake. And throughout the springtime, snowmelt period, and precipitation, it fills this lake up, and the Tulsipaw Glacier blocks that water from draining out until there's a certain amount of water within that basin to actually lift the glacier up and start flowing out of the lake and then into the Taku River. And so that's what we saw take place earlier this week, where it got to a certain level within Lake No Lake to start the draining process. And that draining process starts out slow, and then as that hole progressively gets larger and larger through friction and the water melting the ice, the more water comes out of Lake No Lake until it's totally drained out.
On Wednesday, the water levels were at 45 and a half feet, and so that broke a record. But before, how high did it get?
Oh, the previous record from 2004 was just over 45 feet. It was 45.1 feet. And that came from 2004, and that was another glacier dam outburst flood from Lake No Lake that produced that record flooding.
So how does this fit in with the other rivers in Southeast? Are they seeing similar melting and high water?
Yes, a lot of our larger river systems are running at fairly high levels for this time of year, and mainly due to the high above normal snowpack conditions that we saw this past winter, but also a delay in actually our snowmelt period, where we had a really cool spring, so we didn't really have a lot of our typical snowmelt happen in that at the typical time, like in May, and so a lot of that snow wasn't able to really prime and start melting off into the rivers. And we had an atmospheric river, which is a intense precipitation event that got things going a couple weeks ago and kind of got that snowpack ripened, and we started seeing a lot more melt. And with these river basins that started in Canada, they were able to melt a lot of that snow off and bring up a lot of our river levels along those streams to near or at record daily stream flow levels for this time of year.
So, boy, add a little bit of heat, that combination of cold in the winter and then heat in the summer sort of spells trouble. So are we out of the woods yet? I mean, could we see another event where we could have high water like we did this past week?
Typically on these glacier dam outburst floods events, the first one are usually the largest and biggest ones. And then they can, throughout the summer, they could re-block and then refill again to have another release. But typically those are much lower or smaller events, and doesn't really cause too much impacts along our rivers, along the top few at least. But we could see another release later on this summer into early fall, but typically it doesn't usually produce any flood.
So what kind of damage have we seen from this flood on the Taku?
Well, we're still trying to assess the situation up there, exactly what damage took place. We have gotten some aerial photography and has shown some places being inundated, but we're still trying to really track down to see what type of damage took place along the Taku River. So we're really looking for any type of pictures and from residents along the Taku River to help us classify this event and potentially maybe even change our flood levels, due to the only time we've seen these types of levels before was in 2004, where we did see some impacts take place and homes being inundated by floodwaters.
Interesting that you're learning some new things from this. In general, people will want to be out and about this weekend. Are there some precautions they should take, things that they may not be aware of that the high water has brought into the rivers?
Yeah, from these flooding events, they can really produce a lot of debris in the water, a lot of trees and logs that can be floating down the Taku River into Taku Inlet. And that's something that any type of mariner or boaters on the water around the Taku Inlet area should be aware of. If any floating debris, big trees and logs, that could be dangerous.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye out for these things. Thanks. Aaron Jacobs, he's a service hydrologist with the National Weather Service as well as a meteorologist. Thanks for giving us the latest on the Taku.
Not a problem. Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Aaron.
Comes from Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, specializing in the clothing, footwear, and gear needed to live, work, and play in Juneau, Alaska, including gloves, boots, and more, located in the Mendenhall Mall.
Well, we want to thank you for taking time out to catch some conversation with us today on Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. It's great to have you here, as well as having Christine Lewis here. She is the featured artist this month at the Juneau Artist Gallery downtown. She's perhaps best known for her Juneau landscapes. And Christine, why are you so excited about the first Friday showing you have tonight at the gallery? And understand that that is from 4 to 6, so we'll actually have a chance to talk to you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me tonight, Rhonda. I am excited because I've been doing a lot of painting outside recently and have a lot of work that I'd like to show. This is new for me since last May. I've started trying to paint more and more outside and have quite a bit of new work to show.
So is it more challenging to paint outside? I mean, because you got wind blowing, rain, God knows what.
Yes, along with the bugs now and then. There is really a whole new learning curve to painting outside. There's a totally different type of lighting, which is really the main reason people enjoy painting outside. And it's definitely a new challenge.
But what do you get out of it? What have you discovered in doing this?
I think what fascinates me the most is just being so blessed to stand out in the beauty of God's creation and absorb all that beauty and splendor, and then convert that inspiration that I receive into a painting to share with others.
So how did you go about selecting your pieces for tonight's gallery display? I mean, you have a tremendous body of work just looking at your website, so it must have been tough to just narrow it down.
Oh, thank you. I definitely like to focus on landscapes. There's so much inspiration around. My husband and I enjoy getting out hunting and fishing, and we garden and do small hikes. And there's so much inspiration in the landscape here that it's easy to find things to paint. But as far as choosing things to go on the wall, it was trying to have a little bit of variety. I do have my favorite locations, like painting over at Brotherhood Bridge. The glacier is always inspirational. Or trying to find some place that's a little bit secluded without being inundated with, anything that might be interrupting, because you really do have to concentrate because the light changes so quickly. You don't have a lot of time to do a painting.
Well, a lot of people like to work off of photographs. You know, they'll go out in the summer, take a bunch of pictures, and then in the winter, work off of those photos. Do you do that as well?
I do. In fact, and it's been about 10 years that I've been doing oils, and I started out taking my own photographs, outdoors especially, and I do a lot of that, partly because we get so much rain. And just recently, again, we've had good long periods of sun where I've been able to get out and make it worthwhile. But it's definitely more inspirational to get outside. Once you start doing it, it's not quite the same to use a photo anymore.
Well, from what I understand, you're self-taught. Like, you didn't go to a big art school, that you learned on your own. How did you go about doing that?
Yes, it's been a journey, and I am really a big supporter of that. It takes a lot of time and a lot of practice, but I feel so blessed to be able to have access to YouTube videos. There are a lot of people out there teaching and doing demonstrations that you can view for yourself. And I was able to find a few people that did similar styles that I was interested in, and would watch their videos and sometimes purchase a workshop. And then on top of that, a lot of practice.
So what do you hope to accomplish with your work? I mean, what do you hope your art evokes in people when they see it?
I guess mostly the passion that I feel for the way I just love being out there. And I guess when I'm out there, I just feel such a huge sense of gratitude and thankfulness to God for how beautiful our surroundings are. It's just so enjoyable. It's free to get out and enjoy. I'm just so grateful for that. And when I get that inspiration, that's really my goal, to share that and evoke that feeling of thankfulness and gratitude in my work.
Well, I have seen that come out in your work when I've visited the gallery in the past. And one of the things that I especially like are the miniatures that you do, the smaller landscape paintings. How hard is that to do, to kind of scale it down?
I started doing those when I joined the gallery in 2017 and was really overwhelmed with the way people responded to them. They do take a little bit of time. They vary depending on the subject matter, but I have always kind of enjoyed detail anyway. But it's almost like a good practice session to see how it goes before I try a larger picture. But I'm so overwhelmed with how people enjoy them that it pushes me to continue to do them more. I really enjoy them.
You know, and it's kind of affordable art in a way. I think that's another thing that people like about it, is they can have a nice piece of your work, and it's affordable. Mm-hmm. Do you ever think about that as kind of making art affordable for people?
I definitely do. I like the idea of everybody being able to own original art, not just prints. And prints can be wonderful, but my grandmothers were both artists, in fact, and one of them in particular started painting herself just so that after she got married, she had paintings to put in her house. And she painted until she was about 80 years old and sold many, many paintings that went all over the world. And that inspired me too. I think that's a great, great thing.
Well, I heard another one of your specialties is that you, on commission, will do pet portraits. And that's very different from your other body of work with landscapes.
Yes, that's true. I do love getting a good pet commission. I've done several since I've been at the gallery. And I actually started during high school and college doing pencil portraits of children mostly, and then evolved into doing some pets. But it just doesn't give me the same inspiration that the landscape does, but I do still enjoy doing them for diversion.
So are you going to be out on this holiday weekend with your easel and your oil paint, pots of oil paint.
Well, we do have several more nice days predicted, so that's very likely.
So it's no holiday for you necessarily.
Oh, I really feel like every day is a holiday when I get out to paint. It's just the best thing that I can imagine. It's really, really fun.
So what are you working on this summer?
I actually have a list of things that I want to do, but my goal is to try a few new spots out on location and start doing some bigger ones. But again, because of the minis being, people being so interested in them, I am going to try to paint some of those outside. They're actually 2.5 by 3.5 inches. And my wonderful husband makes all my easels and my frames. And he's made me a beautiful stand that holds my minis well. And I'm going to try to use that to paint outside and see what I can come up with.
So what are the things that you want to do next with your talents? Do you have your sights set on some new challenges?
I do, actually. I actually have a few family members with some pictures that they'd like me to do for them. One is of my niece, and she's exuberantly jumping at the beach. And I haven't done a full figure in quite a while. So I'm going to try that for her, and again, try some larger pieces of work too. So that would be a big challenge for me.
Well, you always have to have some kind of a challenge. So for those folks who just tuned in, I am talking to Christine Lewis, and tonight she is going to be at the Juno Artist Gallery. She is the featured artist of the month. And can you tell us a little bit about what you've prepared for this first Friday?
Well, I would like to say, too, that I'm so appreciative to the gallery and all the members. I believe we have about 16 members right now. They're always so encouraging and supportive of me and my work. And it's just a wonderful thing to have a co-op where the members can support each other in their various skills. And it's a great thing. So I'm not sure who all will be joining me tonight, but I am looking forward greatly to sharing my new work and getting to talk to a few people and express to them how wonderful it is to just be in Juneau and to get outside and share the beauty that I get to paint.
Well, you know, there is so much beauty, and there is a lot of art inspired by that. I mean, you can just look in that gallery and see waterfall paintings and all kinds of wonders there. But you have to wonder, too, how people select their subjects, because there is just mm-hmm. so much to choose from. I mean, how do you go about sort of prioritizing, oh, I'll paint this or that?
Yes, it is very difficult at times. I think for me, I think my goal is usually to suggest the lighting on a scene and, you know, not get it exact, but to suggest whatever the lighting situation is. And for me particularly, I like mornings. I'm a morning person and I love the sunrise. I love to get up and be out there even before sunrise. It's just really interesting to observe the changing as the light changes throughout the day and how it influences everything we see. So when you're outside, it's especially challenging because, as we all know here, it's so broad and vast what we are looking at. So to hone in on a small image, a small part of what you see, to do a painting can be very challenging. It's often almost impossible to do.
But somehow you managed to do it. Well, good luck with your gallery First Friday event tonight. That's really exciting. I know people are glad to be able to see the artists in person now and get to ask them questions about their work. So thanks so much, and we hope it all goes well.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
as we go into this holiday weekend, we know that our next guest, Brenda Wright, with the Juneau Audubon Society, will be out looking for those birds, regardless of what's going on. But Brenda, where have you been lately checking out the birds?
Well, I've been to two really fun places, Eagle Beach and Fish Creek on North Douglas. And I like going to Fish Creek on North Douglas because although most of the birds aren't singing, they're all very, very busy feeding their families. And so you get to see lots of busy parents.
So we have got three birds this week that you selected, the spotted sandpiper, the golden-crowned kinglet, and the sharp-skinned hawk. So I guess, should we start with the spotted sandpiper? Want to tell us a little bit about that bird?
Sure. This is one of the few sandpipers that will stay with us all summer. It really likes freshwater streams. You can often see it quite easily near the glacier. And at Peterson Creek and lots of other places, they really do like a small, clear water, freshwater stream.
Interesting. And so we have some sound to play so you can hear what this bird sounds like. I like that sort of rapid fire ending to that bird call.
Yep. If they want your attention, they're sure going to get it. This little guy is only a little bit bigger than a robin, just about the same height, actually. And it's spotted, that hence the name, right? Spotted sandpiper.
Right. You know, you see these birds, but you don't often know what they sound like. And I suppose it's good to know that because you might know that they're in the area when you hear them. Now, this
yes.
one that you selected, the sharp-skinned hawk, that's an interesting name. Where does that come from?
Well, I might have not typed it quite correctly because it's sharp-shinned.
Oh,
like,
shinned.
Like your shins of your legs.
Ah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And they live with us all winter, at least a few do, because they like people that have bird feeders. They eat small birds. They're one of the smallest hawks, but their prey of choice is small birds.
Well, they don't look like a hawk that you'd expect to see. I mean, because you see these great big hawks with these huge wing spans out there soaring. And does this one have any different habits than some of your bigger hawks?
You know, if you've ever seen race cars, sometimes they're really low to the ground and super fast. That's what this one is. It's a screaming fast little guy. It can come right out of the trees and down to your feeder and it's gone.
Okay, well, let's hear this screaming little guy. You know, it doesn't sound like a hawk or like I think a hawk would sound.
Yep. Well, they have a piercing call like that because they're warning other people that they're getting too close to their territory most of the time when they're screaming like that. But that's one thing. If you don't want to have birds, you don't want to have any birds around your neighborhood, just put a recording like that on your porch, and they'll all leave.
Seriously?
they know danger's in the vicinity. Danger's in the vicinity. Yep.
So if you have a recording of this bird, it will scare other birds mm-hmm. away. Wow.
It will. Yep. They know the ones that are after their little tails.
Okay. So I'm going to correct my mistake here. Sharp-shinned hawk. That almost sounds like a tongue twister. Sharp-shinned hawk. How many times can you say it before tripping up? But we got one more here, the golden-crowned kinglet. That sounds rather regal.
It is. It's a very beautiful little bird.
And melodic. Let's hear a little bit of it. Thank you. And I guess it's called the Golden Crown Kinglet because it has a patch of yellow on its head.
Yep, indeed. And you're very, very lucky to get to see it. Mostly you'll get to see that little golden crown when they're being territorial or being looking for a sweetheart in the early spring. Most of the time it's not visible. They just look like they have a little green head. But this is another resident. It lives with us all year round. And it loves, this is a very tiny bird, one of the smallest ones we have. It lives in the tallest of the Sitka spruce trees. So good luck seeing it. Please have good luck.
Well, you must get really excited when you actually spot one of these.
Oh, it was so amazing. I just love it when they come down for some reason in the springtime, right to eye level, and just cheerfully show off that beautiful golden crown. But it doesn't happen real frequently. But so you can hear them.
So I guess that's why bird watching is such a never-ending venture, because there's always probably a bird that you aren't able to see very often.
That's exactly right. Then the ones that live here, at least if you're familiar with their sounds, you can know where to look for them.
Well, so very quickly wrapping things up, where do you recommend we go this weekend if we want to take time from all these other activities to have some quiet time with the birds?
Well, you know, still the Moose Lake, the Dredge Lake area is still mighty fine because it's got such a wide variety of habitats. But if you want to see maybe baby mallards or mergansers, you're going to have to go near the shore, freshwater or saltwater, to see those guys.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Brenda Wright with the Juneau Audubon Society bringing us our birds of the week. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Support for Juneau Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klinkit & Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
And that will do it for Juneau Afternoon on this Friday, heading into the holiday weekend. Here at KTOO, we hope everyone has a safe and happy July 4th holiday. Thanks for joining us.